Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the show where stats, analysis, and fancy words still can't save us from being completely wrong. What have we learned this week?
At Palace, we qualify for the Conference League proper with our first European trip. And a positive away win at Villa tops off a strong week on the field.
At Brighton, after a convincing win in the Carabao Cup, our super subs got the job done against Man City. And, of course, we'll look ahead to the upcoming fixtures for Palace and Brighton, because this is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Neil.
Hello, mate. You all right?
I'm all right, thank you. Yes. So, look, we've got a lot to catch up on this pod. So, we've got four games, two Premier League games, one European game, yep, and one Carabao Cup game. It's, yep, like we're ticking them off, right?
So much to get through.
And I think it's been a reasonably successful week to have a conversation about all of this.
Mate, we're winning the whole thing.
Neil, let's not get carried away, mate. Oxford. Wasn't it Oxford?
All right, they're still a championship side.
Unbelievable.
Should we talk about that first, can we?
Go on. You start things off, mate, because, again, a week ago, Neil, you were crying in a blanket in the corner. Now you think you're going to win the league because you've beaten Oxford. Go for it.
Oh, Carabao Cup. Who knew that would make me so much joy? Last week's game, we went away to Oxford United, League Cup, and I didn't know what to expect, let's be honest. We were wondering whether, you know, they were going to change the side, they were going to put in all of the reserves, the guys that hadn't had a chance to play yet. I was hoping to see some Greek people of some sort.
You'd think so, mate.
We would think so, yeah. The lineups came out and he definitely changed a lot, Fabian Hürsler. So we had Steele in goal, Veltman, Coppola and Boscagli both getting their debuts in defence, with Igor Julio, who had a fun week as well, as we know. Milner turning up in midfield alongside Jack Inglewood. Harry Howe getting his first official start as a 17-year-old.
Wow.
Diego Gomez, Caddy Oglu getting a first start as well of the season. And then Brian Gruder up front on his own. So still no Greeks, but they were on the bench, thankfully. So this time the bench looked a little bit better in that sense. So we had Kostoulas and Simas on the bench, as well as Tommy Watson as well, our signing from Sunderland. So definitely looked like he rang the changes. I was listening to a few people on the radio that don't know Brighton that well, and they were making the point that, oh, well, it clearly shows that the Brighton manager doesn't really care about the League Cup, making this many changes. Little did he know that all these players have a point to prove, and they wanted to make their point very clearly, and they did on that game. And I thought it was a good performance. I think it was a great watch, actually, to be fair. Oxford were actually pretty good in the sense of wanting to attack, wanting to score, wanting to do something. They didn't sit back. They were quite an attacking side. And if I'm honest, defensively, we were okay, but I think it was clear that we had four players that had never played together before. Steele was possibly the man of the match. He made some fantastic saves, and Oxford had plenty of chances. So it was an interesting game in the sense that defensively we probably weren't great, but with the ball we were really good, and we were really calm in possession and doing really well. So where to start, mate? I mean, look, first of all, I think it's great to see Boscagli and Coppola get out there and get their minutes.
Yeah.
And Boscagli, he looks fantastic. You can tell he's a man of experience. He's a leader, natural leader, talking to all the players, getting people on side, people understanding what's needing to be done. It's really nice to see a naturally left-sided defender as well, someone who can take the ball out onto that left side. And it was really nice to see them both out there. And interesting, Boscagli was the guy to actually open up the scoring. So he scored on the 13th minute, got the first goal. It was a nice little move from a corner, but actually his shot was sort of deflected and it looped over the goalkeeper. But it was great to get a first goal in, and I think that settled everyone down and we played quite well after that. I think it was just such a fun game, as I say, to watch. And Gruder got the second before half time. It was funny, actually. There was a moment when Gruder went through a few minutes before he scored, and he only had the keeper to beat, and he tried to go round the keeper and he mucked it up completely.
Oh.
Now, foreshadowing for what happened against Man City. So it was interesting that he did it in the week, it didn't work, and then we know what happened on Sunday. But Gruder was probably our best player on the pitch, if I'm honest, all the way through the whole game. He was sparkled. He got his goal, I think it was around 20 minutes-ish, around that time. And from that moment on, the confidence in him grew and he really ran the show. I thought he was really, really good. So, yeah, two up at the break. But honestly, mate, the thing I wanted to talk about most was the fact that when we got to around the hour mark, we finally made some changes and we finally get to see the other guys. Simas comes on, I think it was, as I say, around the hour mark, and we finally got to see, look, appreciate it's just Oxford, right? And they are...
Yeah, let's just remember that.
Yeah, they are. They're a low championship side. They're not in a great amount of form, but you still have to beat the people that are in front of you. And I thought Simas coming on changed the dynamic of how we played. Where we got Gruder up front, and very much like when we're playing Jorginho Rutter up front, we're playing a player that isn't naturally a striker that wants to get in behind. They want to come short, they want to get on the ball, and then they're expecting people to run past them. And that slows us down a little bit. With Simas on the pitch, he was on the last defender constantly, wanting to dart in behind. And the goal that he scored, the first goal, Andy, the first goal, not even all of his goals, the first goal he scored was exactly like that. Him playing on the last defender, a ball being pushed through and him running on. He sprinted through, had the goalkeeper to beat and literally just slotted it past. And that type of goal, we rarely see at Brighton. It sounds ridiculous, but actually that running on is where we, I think Hörsler's trying to get us to, that place where we've got a lot of space in the back and we try and push it through. And yeah, it was a great goal, great finish. So happy for him to get a goal straight away. And then literally 5 minutes later, he gets a second goal. And that is a poacher's finish where we're high press, trying to chase down all the defenders. And I think it's Watson, who actually was on the pitch by then, picks up the ball, passes it to Simas, and he's literally standing there in front of the goalkeeper and just strokes it past him straight away like he wasn't there. So again, really cool on that finish. Gets his second goal and no one can believe it. I don't think it helped the anticipation of the Brighton fans thinking, oh my God, we've got a player who's just come on, he's scored two goals, he's the next Messiah. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think that really helped
in that sense, Fabian's sort of idea of trying to bring them in slowly. But yeah, he played very well. He got into the right positions and he put in two goals, which I was really pleased about. The other thing I probably wanted to talk about was Tommy Watson. And it's the first real indication of what type of player he is. I've seen him obviously for Sunderland and him coming on against Oxford. He was very similar to how Mitoma plays. Now, don't get me wrong. He's not at the level that Mitoma is.
Yeah.
But he has the same qualities. He constantly wants the ball on the left-hand side, constantly wants to cut in. He's constantly looking for the right pass. He was so cool with his finish for the sixth goal. Yes, that's right, the sixth goal for Albion. Honestly, it was my favourite goal I've seen this season so far. It was a beautiful curling shot into the top corner, something that I was very surprised to see for a lad of that age. And he's someone that a lot of people have talked about having the quality to go on and be so much more. And I think I now understand why, when I was going on and on about Tyler Dibbling last year and saying Brighton should sign him, I now suddenly realise why we didn't. Because this kid, I think he's got all of the attributes to be a really good player. And he's just got called up to the England under-21 side as well. So that's a really good sign for him. But look, going back to the game, I won't go on and on about it. It was a really good performance attacking-wise. We had plenty of chances. Albion, I think, had 62% of the possession. I think we only had 9 shots on target. I say only, but if you think about the fact that we scored 6, we only had 9 shots on target.
Well, this is what I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, yeah, because Oxford, okay. Yeah, Oxford created lots of chances for us, them.
Well, if you ever look at the stats, mate, you're right. You had 9 shots on target. They had 11, yeah, right? You both had 19 shots, right? So that would say to me that, well, I'm not trying to take anything away from you because you won 6-0, right? It was convincing. But Oxford clearly have had an absolute nightmare here in terms of they've created enough chances, but they just couldn't score. And
I don't think it's necessarily a nightmare. I think if you look at how many saves Jason Steele made, I think you'll see what the answer is, because he was absolutely fantastic, as I said at the beginning. We let in so many opportunities for Oxford, And Jason Steele made huge amounts of saves. Yeah. He was fantastic. He was man of the match. And I think, as I said, the defence, it showed that they were four players that had never played together.
10 saves.
Yeah, yeah. And that's my point. So they were on target a lot. They had lots of opportunity, but Jason Steele just did not let them in. And he was fantastic on the night. And I still think he's a better option than Verbruggen, personally, at the moment. But no one believes me. The ultimate answer there is, attacking-wise, I think we probably did a lot of what Fabian Hoesler wanted us to do.
Yeah.
Defensively, it just looked like a side that didn't quite know how to play it together.
I was going to say, because if you're letting them in that amount of time on a game against Oxford, yeah. And again, you kept a clean sheet, so I'm not digging you out.
No,
but
I agree.
I think you've given a team like Oxford a lot of shots on target. It's a bit of a worry.
No, I don't think it's a worry. I don't think we'd play that four together if it was a serious match in that sense. If it was a team that we knew we had a real challenge against, I don't think we'd see that four play together.
Yeah.
I don't think that would make sense, and I don't think he would do that, Hoesler. So I think it was an opportunity. He took a bit of a risk to try and get as many players out there, giving them minutes to get them ready for the season ahead.
It was a risk that paid off.
It did, mate. It did. So look, overall, I think it was really good performance attacking wise. And I think I was really happy about that. One little point I did notice was we had an XG for that game of around 2.35. We scored 6 goals. We have an XG of 2.35, which was under what we had at Everton.
Wow. Wow.
Just crazy. Absolutely crazy. So yeah, look, good performance. Job done. And most importantly, from my point of view, we got minutes for the players that needed the minutes.
Well, and also, do you remember what we spoke about on last week's pod about how this Carabao Cup game was perfect timing for you guys? Because I felt like you were in a little bit of a rut in terms of, I mean, you were, you know, off the chart in terms of dismal mood at that point. And to have a cup game against a team such as Oxford and get yourself a convincing win under your belt before a game such as Man City, I think, even though you're right, loads of changes, all that, but for morale reasons, perfect opportunity for you to right your wrongs, as it were.
I agree. I should actually also make a point that Kostoulas did get on the pitch. He did play a few minutes at the end as well. I think he's a lot further behind Simas in the sense of overall fitness.
Okay.
I don't think we'll see him for a while in the first team. But yeah, overall, very happy. And we moved on to Man City. How about you guys? You had Fredrikstad, didn't you?
Again, yes, we did. And
probably played out how we expected it to, didn't it?
Mate, do you know what? Here's the thing about this game. The first game at Selhurst Park, we were convincing. We had a lot of possession. I was there watching it all. And obviously, look, we won 1-0. We could have won 3-0 or 4-0. It just wasn't our night. You know, like they were sitting back doing what we do against other teams. Made it very difficult for us. We go into that second leg, our first ever away European game, playing on a plastic pitch in the middle of Norway. We went in 1-0 up. Let's be honest, right? It was our, what was it, fourth game in 12 days, I think, right? And Eze just gone. Everyone's worrying about transfers, all the other bits and pieces. What's the objective of this game? Get through it, right? Yeah. Just get to the Conference League proper and kind of let's not make this whole embarrassing situation with the Europa League and Conference League and all. Let's just not make it even worse by not actually qualifying for the thing we got demoted to.
Absolutely, yeah.
So in essence, look, spoiler, it was 0-0. It was a dull, boring, drab game. 90 minutes of my life, I'm never going to get back because it was boring as hell. It was not a good watch. I think if I'd have gone out to Norway for that game, I think the adrenaline of actually just kind of getting through the whole situation and experiencing our first ever European game would have been enough. But Glasner did not go into that game to entertain. He went into that game to not lose it and also hopefully to not get anyone else injured. I think it showed our lack of squad depth at that time. And also it showed that that they were tired, the guys were tired, and you could see that. But also the thing to not underestimate, and the thing that we sometimes do when we review these games, we don't kind of give the opposition team any credit. And Fredrikstad, whilst they're not, you know, Real Madrid, they, I think, played a lot more comfortably and with a lot more positivity in attack. I think they defended brilliantly, like they did against us at Selhurst Park,
and
showed why they've ended up in... Bearing in mind, this is the team that were meant to have been in the Europa League, but they lost out to another team and ended up getting into the Conference League playoffs. So I think that they were at home. They were feeling a lot more comfortable. This was their last chance. This is their, like, they played four games in 2 weeks in terms of qualifiers to get into a European competition. This was the last of these four games. You're playing for pride at this point, right? They threw everything at it. And you could really, really see that. I think they were playing as if their lives depended on it. Luckily, their attacks didn't really threaten Henderson too much. Ultimately, as I said, the team did their job. We qualified for Europe. My man of the match was actually Chris Richards. I think he did brilliantly.
Okay.
And this is the guy that stands next to the one that everyone's talking about, right? And I think this is the difference at the moment with Palace, which is that we are a team now. We're not a one-player team. The media likes to still portray us as that, but people can come in and out of our team now and it still works and it still functions.
Yeah.
And Chris Richards really stood out for me, not only defensively, but also his opportunities that he had in the air in the opposition box are brilliant. And he's going to notch up quite a few goals this season from his head. So, yeah, look, I don't think we need to go into it too much and talk about the big moments of the game.
Nil-nil, because they're boring as hell, mate.
There bloody weren't any, mate. There were no big moments of that game, really.
The most important thing is, though, mate, that you're through, you're done. I think that's what's so great about it. Like, you're actually in the Conference League now. I know it's a bit of a mess, the whole thing, but you just look forward now, don't you? And the fact that you're actually in it is just, it's just great. You've got such a great season ahead of you.
Yeah, and look, we've experienced our first ever away day in Europe. Mm. It was Oliver Glasner's birthday. So I think it was a little bit of an excursion out to Norway to see how it's done and to experience that four games in 12 days thing.
Yeah.
And how we're going to get through that game and endure it. And do you know what? Let's be honest here, right? Sometimes you win them big trophies by dealing with situations where you get on a plane with 14 players.
Mm.
By the way, we didn't even name our full lineup on the bench, right?
Well,
we had empty seats.
Yeah.
So I think to get through that situation shows grit, shows determination. And I believe that's how you end up winning some of these competitions.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, you know, you don't win 6-0 every game, do you?
No.
So anyway, from my perspective, it weren't pretty. Let's not talk about it for too long, but we're on our way to Europe. That'll do for me.
I don't blame you, mate. I don't blame you. So the whole Thursday thing, that means now that you're going to have most of your games probably on a Sunday. And that's what happened this week, wasn't it? You had the unusual 7 p.m. on a Sunday slot, which, that's a pain. That's a pain.
I mean, needless to say, Neil, that we didn't sell out our full allocation at Villa Park because the poor supporters couldn't even get home from
crazy.
Birmingham Way at that time of night. I mean, ridiculous.
Let's talk about the game. How did it pan out from that perspective? It was Aston Villa 0, Crystal Palace, as always, against Aston Villa, I believe. You were telling me last week. 3!
Mate, well, I mean, again, right, it's a really difficult one to... I mean, I think I said 2-1, didn't I? In my prediction. So I thought we were going to win, but you just never know that if you've got, you know, from Thursday to Sunday, that team looked crusty. Or like, do you know what I mean? Against Fredrikstad, we didn't, whilst I didn't see us conceding, our chances up front didn't look great.
Right.
Going into a game against Aston Villa, who are, let's be honest, they were going to come at us because we're making them look stupid at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you just didn't quite know how it was going to go. We made a couple of changes from the starting 11 against Fredrikstad. Tyrick Mitchell came back in for Sosa. Will Hughes came back in for Lerma. And our new signing, Jeremy Pino, was on the bench, which was exciting for everybody. Bearing in mind he'd only signed a couple of days before that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Pino did make it out to Norway for a bit of training, but he only had, I think, 48 hours with us beforehand. I think we soaked up the pressure very, very well. And I think that was part of the game plan, which was...
It's always part of the game plan when you were lot.
Well, it is, but I think even more so with loads of knackered players. And I think it was very much like, look, let them do their best and they can have the ball and we'll just keep them out. And look, we got our reward on the 20-minute mark. Kamada got caught in the area and Mateta very calmly stepped up and scored that penalty and then got booked for kicking the corner flag.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit rude.
What, kicking the corner flag?
They kicked it properly out. He could have broken it, yeah, yeah.
Well, got a bit of a conspiracy theory going on here. Villa are used to Mateta kicking that corner flag.
Do you, right.
I wonder whether they didn't put it in properly.
No, it's supposed to come out easily, mate. That's the point, in case you get injured on
it. Well, it's meant to flop. It's meant to flop and come back up again.
Yeah, but not if you kick it.
Mate, how many times... Right, Mateta scored a reasonable amount of goals last year. How many corner flags went flying?
Well, he should get booked every time. You shouldn't kick someone else's corner flag. If it's your own corner flag, I think it's slightly different. If you're away, I think you have a little bit of respect.
I think that what's going to be happening here is that all of the away games that we play now... them corner flags are all of a sudden going to miraculously all go flying from this point forward.
I hope so. I hope we get booked every game and gets banned.
I think someone's a little bit jealous over there with our striker. I think the game's gone, mate, if we're getting banned for celebrations.
That's the rules. It is. It's the rules, actually. In all seriousness, it's the
isn't it funny how everyone's finding new rules for Palace these days?
You find new rules to break. That's what you find.
Two games last week, 1 metre away from the wall. Two games last week that didn't get picked up. How interesting. Just remember, we'd be second in the league if that goal hadn't been disallowed. I digress. Move on. So, 1-0 up. We go into half-time and I'm like, okay, this is all right. We're doing all right. 1-0 up at Villa. It's going to be all right. After half-time, Villa come out strong, as they need to. Villa, it's embarrassing. You can't keep losing to us under these situations because it's just getting silly. Henderson made some really good saves from Tielemans and Rodgers, but it felt like we had it under control. Always felt like the defence had it strong, all good, right? Then became the moment that I've been dreading, which I think we all kind of knew was going to start happening, the injuries.
Yes.
Walton's gone off injured. Bless this boy. He just got called up for England.
I know. I did feel for him in that sense. I think that's really bad. Do we know the extent of any problem with him yet? Is there any sort of indication as to how long he's out or what the problem is?
Well, I think he's going to be back for the October fixtures. I think he's going to miss Dynamo Kiev and a few of the other games. You could just tell from his face that it was something that isn't pretty. So, yes, he went off injured. And then with the bad came the good, Neil. And something wonderful happened.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Mark Gaye, in his own half, carries the ball into space and ended up somehow, after, you know, just basically running at people as a central defender, ended up pretty much in the Villa box. He then passes it left and picks up back on the clearance, completely unmarked, because everyone's like, why would you mark the central defender on the outside of your own box? That's just silly. And then Gaye just looks up and very calmly curls the ball into the top corner. Completely unchallenged.
It was a beautiful finish. I looked at it, it was lovely. It was such a lovely thing to watch. It really was. And I bet he was thinking, what a wonderful end to my Crystal Palace career. I go over to the fans and I'll show them how much they've meant to me in the years that I've been here. I'll see you later, boys. Thank you for that last present.
No, what he actually meant was that was our 500th top flight away goal, Neil, is what was in his head.
Is that what it was in his head?
I'm going to go and celebrate this one. And look, it was a brilliant goal. And yeah, you're right. I think obviously the narrative from the media was
the media,
a great
again.
Goodbye, yeah. Blah, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. It very much probably was going to be that. Yes, Neil. But anyway, with 20 minutes remaining, then we bring on Jeremy, which obviously was a very exciting moment for us all because we were like, Spanish wonder kid, Spanish international.
Yeah.
Is he actually any good? And I think the answer is yes, he is, Neil. Yes, he is. He looked very exciting. We only got 20 minutes of him, but he looked very quick, very technically gifted. And he ain't afraid to run with that ball and take people on, which is what we needed. We need that creative spark along with the structure that comes around him. And I think give him a month on that training field and he's going to change the way we do things. I'm genuinely excited about the prospect of him.
I think, you know, you've got a couple of new players now and it's something that you're going to have to get used to playing slightly different because these are different players with different qualities, obviously. And I'm interested to see if there will be any slight subtle tweaks from Glasner as well, because obviously you've got different players on the pitch now. I think it's such a blow to have Wharton off for a few weeks at a time when really you need them all on the pitch to start gelling and sort of working out how to play together. So it'll be interesting to see what Glasner does moving forward for the next few weeks at least. I think the first reports are that Wharton's going to be out for about 3 or 4 weeks, they reckon. So I think having Pino is another option, technically a really good player. I think that's very exciting for you guys.
Oh, it will be. It absolutely will be. Yeah. So then came the final blow to Villa, Neil. The one that not many Villa fans saw. There weren't many of them left at that point. It was an exodus. Bearing in mind that Villa haven't lost at home for a very, very long time. Right?
Good point.
Until obviously Palace rock up. So all of these very spoiled season ticket holders were getting the right ump. 78 minutes, Palace have a throw-in. Lerma goes for this long throw that he's becoming famous for now. Lacroix flicks it in. And Saar heads it backwards on the back of his head, kind of to the back far post, whilst also being taken out by both legs by the keeper at exactly the same time. Everyone celebrates, realises that Saar potentially could have died and could be dead on the floor. All the Palace players are around him, you know, tapping him, punching him, all the other bits and pieces going, yeah, come on, and nothing.
He didn't move, did he?
Just nothing. and then the referee even blows the whistle to bring on the medics. And then all of a sudden, Saar springs up and sprints towards the other corner flag and celebrates.
Talk about giving the physios a heart attack.
Yeah, brilliant. What a great thing to do. I mean, love it. Absolutely love it. And again, look, Saar was in the right place. The only issue we have now, Wharton's injured. Saar is also out probably for 2 to 3 weeks. 3-0 win against Aston Villa. Man of the match, of course, Gaye. All-round game, superb. That's 6 games unbeaten against Villa now, with Villa conceding a mere 19 goals against us in them 6 games. It's embarrassing. And another clean sheet, by the way, from us. I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you know the last time that Palace lost a competitive game, Neil?
Oh my God, really?
No, I'm serious.
Through that, are we?
No. Come on, serious question.
The last time they lost a competitive game.
Yeah.
Well, obviously not this season. Last season.
That's right, because we're one of the 3 teams that haven't lost a game yet.
Yeah. How many games ago do you want? Like a number, or do you want a date? What do you want?
Either or, number or a date.
I reckon something like the 20th of April or something.
Yeah, 16th of April. And it was a very well-known loss. Because I don't know if you remember, we were actually doing really, really well.
Yeah.
And then we lost 2 games spectacularly. And one of them 2 games that we lost was against Newcastle 5-0.
Oh, yes.
And I think the other one was Man City, where we got done by 5 goals. We shipped in 10 goals in 2 games. And then now we've gone on a run, which I believe is 14 competitive games. And obviously won a couple of cups in that time. We were out gloating. So 16th of April was the last time we lost.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, so I have to be honest. Yeah,
1-7, drawn 7.
I mean, it'll change when you play us, obviously. But I mean, for now, enjoy it while it lasts.
Oh, mate, of course. I mean, you're going to absolutely wallop us. I mean, you just beat Oxford United.
You beat someone else this week, mate, as well.
Yeah.
Should we talk about that?
Just.
Shall
go
we?
On. Yeah, go on. Let's
Shall
do
we?
It. Go on. Let's do it. I mean, everyone beats them these days. Let's do it. Go on. Tell us about that game, Neil.
Well, I can't lie. Last week, I was sitting here saying, not really sure what's going to happen. Not really happy about the situation with our strikers and our forward players.
Yep.
And the midweek game obviously gave me confidence that we had somebody or some players in attack that will be good at some point in the future. But I still didn't expect to see them this week against Man City. And lo and behold, absolutely what happened. We got to the game, we saw the lineup, and yeah, I mean, it was pretty much what we expected. There were a couple of things that I think was probably worth pointing out. So first of all, Danny Welbeck up front. Okay, fine. He had a mare the other week. Let's see if he does better. Gomez was in the hole. Jorginho Rutter, who had been injured the week before, who had a slight knock, just wasn't quite fit enough to start. He was on the bench, though, so that was a bit of a sigh of relief. And the other thing that happened, we had another one of those Freaky Fridays, Andy, that I talk about every single week, it feels like, where we had a fully fit squad on Thursday in the press conference. Lo and behold, it gets to the weekend, and now this time Wefa is not in the squad at all. He's got a slight knee knock. So a slight knee injury, that'll probably be him until 2027 or
just
something.
Just need to cancel Friday training, surely.
Honestly, what happens? Seriously. So, yeah, he had a slight knock. Therefore, his right-back position was covered by Joel Veltman. And let's be honest, I'm more than happy with Joel Veltman as a right-back. He's a menace and he's got great game management. And I was very happy to see him there. The game overall, I think I was worried about what type of City would turn up. I knew probably what Brighton were going to be like, but I wasn't expecting what I saw, I have to be honest. So I think what I would say, first of all, is the first half, I'll probably give you a few lines about that, because there wasn't much to talk about in some respects. City had the majority of the ball. Albion were working hard. They were not really penetrating City that much. The couple of opportunities, one quick passing move for Mitoma, which he shot wide. But generally speaking, it was mostly City with the ball and trying to find an opportunity for them to score. And Haaland does his usual. It was almost a mirror of last season's game, really. Around the 34th minute, we made some really sloppy decisions in defence. We passed it really badly. We gave up the ball. We tackled. We got the ball back. We gave it back again. It's like a real mess, really, of about three or four mistakes of our midfield and defenders that led to, I think it was Marmoush that had the ball literally around the penalty spot, poked the ball through to Haaland, who just chipped it over the keeper. 34 minutes, I think that was. 1-0 down. But to be honest, it was a bit of a nothing game. There wasn't like loads of opportunities on either side. City had the majority of the play.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective at that point, I was listening to it on the radio and I think I was like, normal service.
Yeah,
like,
exactly, yeah.
You probably should be losing to Man City.
It was really interesting because it was as if, and I think this was actually maybe a tactic, but bizarrely, not the goal, conceding the goal, but the tactic of, I think they were trying to just contain. I think they were just trying to nullify Man City for a while in the way that we were playing. We were pressing, but only pressing at a certain point. And when the Man City got to a certain point within the pitch, when Man City had the possession in our half, we were playing a five at the back. So Minté was dropping in, which we've done quite a few times last season, to a five. So it was very similar and very contained. And I think we were trying our best not to concede any goals, which is an obvious thing to say. But actually, I think it was a real conscious decision rather than maybe necessarily going at City, which was normally what we would do in the past. So it got to half time. And yeah, it was a bit of a dull first half. We needed to do something, in my opinion. It was quite frustrating to watch. But at the same time, I think it was seven shots from Man City. I think only three of them were on target. Still quite a lot, but Albion had only had one shot, and that was the Mitoma one that I talked about. So something had to change if we were going to get back into the game. Second half starts, and it sort of followed the same pattern the first sort of 10, 15 minutes. And it wasn't really until, well, I think we all probably know now what happened, but it got to the hour mark, and that's when things changed. Hörsler, for the first time I think I can remember, he actually made a quadruple substitution. And those changes obviously changed the game. They made a huge impact. Ayari and Milner coming on for our midfield pairing of Belabor and Inchelwood. Gruder and Jorginho coming on for Welbeck and Gomez, who was playing in the 10. So the legs of Gomez went off. Welbeck, the more I've seen him this season so far, I'm starting to get a little worried that he's actually starting to go. You know, his legs are going.
How old is he now?
34, I think he is.
Well, I mean, that's probably about the right age for him to, you know.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I've had a small sample size at the moment. We'll have to wait and see a few more games. But the change came. Jorginho went up front, Gruder slightly behind him, but both of them really, plus Ayari, really started to press onto Man City with Ayari as well. And suddenly you could feel the crowd get up. You could see Hörsler. It was almost like they flicked a switch and they said, it's time to go. Let's go for it. And the pressure that they put on Man City in every moment of every pass really started to make a difference to Man City. Man City started to decline. The energy, the spark that lifted the crowd. And suddenly there was like a front four with like pace, you know, quick feet. I think that made a difference as well. When we did get the ball, although in the first half when we got the ball, we felt it looked like we were afraid and we needed to get the ball off to someone else as quickly as possible and we just panicked. This time we had people on the park that felt comfortable keeping the ball, trying to beat their man and then pass it off. And the midfield really trying to make a point of maybe they should have been starting. They were trying to show that they wanted to be on the pitch. I think Milner was just fantastic. The experience he has to be in the right place at the right time. He hasn't got the legs that Belabor's got, but he's there. He's always in the right place. And it was very good to watch someone who maybe Belabor should be learning off of, understanding positional sense. So yeah, the energy, the spark, as I said, was there for that last 30 minutes. And it just flipped on its head the whole game. Two goals 11 shots, 6 on target in the last 30 minutes. You know, Man City just looked empty of ideas. They just looked shell-shocked. We all know what happened. Penalty from a free kick. Bit surprised that it was James Milner that popped up with the penalty. Fantastic for him, though. Becomes the second oldest scorer in the Premier League ever.
Wow.
He's now second in the list for the youngest and second in the list for the oldest Premier League scorer, which I thought was quite a stat. And did a lovely celebration to Diogo Jota as well, which I thought was very nice. And the game, you know, the crowd pumped up. We were excited. We were thinking, okay, let's see what happens. Still worried about what could happen at the other end. But to be fair, Van Hecker and Dunk, they had Haaland so contained for most of that game. It was very interesting. Haaland doesn't have a nice time at the Amex. He gets very frustrated. He's in people's faces. He doesn't get the service that he's expecting. The last two or three occasions he's come, you could see him getting visibly annoyed. So the game went on and we had a few chances here or there to try and get through. And then, Andy, honestly, I don't think I've jumped this hard and been excited this much for a few months. In 89th minute, we all know what happened. It was a wonderful little quick passing move from De Kuyper to Mitoma to Jorginho Rutter, back to Mitoma, who passes the ball through to Gruda. And there he is, running down to the Man City, doing exactly what he did against Oxford, coming up to the goalkeeper. And this time he was still confident to go past the keeper, put him down on his backside alongside Ait Nouri that had tried to come in as well, put them both down on their backsides, get past him and then put it in with his right foot. The one change that he made against Oxford than he did to Man City is against Oxford, he did exactly the same thing, but then tried to put it in with his natural left foot in a wrong sense because he went on his right hand side, then still tried to hook his left foot round it, got it wrong. This time he'd learnt. He got round the goalkeeper, put it straight in with his right foot. Yes, he doesn't like it, but he likes it now. And we all went mental, I have to be honest. Absolutely.
It ruined my day. Because I knew I was a sitter and listen. Oh, less so for the rivalry, mate. More just because I just got to sit here and listen to you tell me how you dominated the game. And I mean, you got a last minute winner and a penalty. But I don't think, my opinion would be 70 minutes on, I mean, there's no way you deserve to walk away with there with 3 points. The last 30 minutes, yeah, fair play.
I agree. I think a point overall in the whole game, I think maybe a point would have been about even.
Yeah.
I think if you'd stopped the game at 60 minutes, Man City should have won the game. Of course they should.
All day long.
But it's a game of 90-plus minutes, Andy. And
luckily for you.
Luckily for us.
Got a bit of a habit of this, haven't you?
Yeah. I think that's
one
really
way or
point.
The other, though.
No, but you're absolutely right. When we're behind against a big six team, we tend to play up and we tend to do something about it.
And then when you're playing the bottom teams, you let them in.
Totally right. Absolutely. Yeah. This is the mentality thing that I talked about last season. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens, but wonder whether they've learned their lessons. But this time, I was jumping around like a madman at 89 minutes because we'd scored the winner. We held on. It was cathartic. It was nice to end the week with two wins, some goals, before we went into the international break. As I said last week, you know, if you'd think we'd lost this game coming into this international break with one point, very much like Villa are suddenly in that situation now, having lost to Palace, it just feels slightly different.
They haven't scored yet, have they, either, Villa?
It feels slightly different. It feels slightly different. You know, we feel up, we feel upbeat. We've got something to hold on to now to look forward to when we come back.
Yeah.
Possession-wise, XG, all that sort of stuff. So I think Albion only ended up with 36% of the ball. I honestly start to feel, when you see some of the games we played last season, we do better when we don't have possession. We do better as a counter-attacking side. I know we're not going to do that, but we tend to have a better way of playing when we have a counter-attacking, less possession and things. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. XG, I think we got 2.29. Man City only had 1.84. It's interesting, though, as well. We've had a penalty in every game so far this season. We've received a penalty in every league game, the three games. Scored two, missed one. Very bizarre. I don't know if that'll continue. We'll have to wait and see.
Your luck can only run for so long on that one.
It's not luck.
Because it can go the other way. Well, yeah, but I mean, it's flip a coin and all that. But
no, but it's us. My point being is that we're getting into those positions.
Yeah.
What's happening is that people are taking us down or something stopping us from scoring. I think, look, I'm not going to be naive. This isn't suddenly our whole season turned around. We obviously didn't see anybody else off the bench from a youth perspective. None of them were on the bench. So Simas, Kostoulas, Watson, none of them made the bench still. We'll have to wait and see when they finally get there. We got a little bit of luck at the right time. Most importantly, though, we had energy, we had spark, we had fight. And that last 30 minutes is the type of thing we need to start every game with.
Oh, absolutely. And look, ultimately, take nothing away from you, mate. You beat a Man City. And whilst a couple of years ago or whatever, that would have been unheard of, it's more of a regular event now. But it's not something that happens easily. No. And ultimately, yeah, you're right. You know, you turned it round. And I think what I got out of that game was your depth of your squad was able to turn that around.
Yes.
Because you had options on the bench. And that's why you buy 17 million players very early in the transfer window. So you've got your options. Something that, you know, Palace potentially don't have now. In fact, we might even struggle in a couple of months to field an 11. Let's see.
Yeah, look. Thank you, mate. My last comment would be that we've ended off this first little segment of the season having played three games with 4 points, pretty much what I was hoping for at the beginning of the start of this season. Yeah. We've done it in the properly Brighton way, where we've lost the games that I should have expected us to win, but we've won the game that I expect us to lose, and we are where we are. But yeah, 4 points, it's not too bad. I'm okay with that from that perspective. And we're only 1 point behind you. So,
well,
it's not like
the more reason that I'll be honest with you, I didn't really care what happened to Brighton at the weekend.
I didn't care what
happened
to Palace.
All I wanted was that I just wanted you to stay down in that relegation zone because I just love seeing it. And I know it's only three games in, but, you know, you ribbing me about finishing in 12th.
No, I get it.
It was lovely to see Brighton that far down. You're right, there's only a point in. And do you know what? Let's be honest. There's no real use looking at that table for another four or five games.
Oh,
really, only up until Christmas probably is when it starts really mattering. But it's the psychological thing about getting your first win, scoring your first goal, and not being down the bottom. It's that kind of confidence that you need at the start of the season, which I think we've both got now.
I agree. And I think, you know, you're quite right. In about 10 league games time, around that moment, we'll understand the impact of how either Brighton's squad has got on and also how Palace have got on from a European football perspective as well, having to play two times a week.
Yeah.
It's going to be a real sort of pain on your squad. And will that affect the league? Well, we'll know that in a few months' time, won't we, one way or the other. And I suppose let's take a break and then we'll talk about the European journey for Palace.
Welcome back, one and all. Neil, this might upset you. Bring back any bad memories of, you know, when Brighton had the luxury of being in Europe, but they did the Conference League draw.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about it, mate. I actually don't mind this. I quite like of talking about all the teams you're going to face, where you've got to go to, and how many players you're going to get injured and therefore lose on a Sunday to someone. So let's talk about it.
Well, you're probably right on all of them fronts. We've been drawn against six clubs.
And because it's like a league status again, isn't it? This one's a bit like the Europa League and the Conference League. They've changed it now, so you get six games, individual ones, not like home and aways either, are they? They're just not legs in that sense. You get one
individual
game.
Three home, three away.
Got it. Right.
And then
okay.
My understanding of it is that the way that the pots worked, there are varying different levels of difficulty in
That's
game,
right. Yep.
Which means then that you get put into this big league with all the other clubs. So it's one league, even though you can't, we were in a league with teams we're not actually playing.
That's right.
And then, of course, it works out, you go from there, basically.
That's right. Then it turns into a knockout after that. So who did you get?
Dynamo Kiev.
Ooh, nice. Where's that, home or away?
That is away.
So that's
going to be played in Poland.
Probably Poland, yeah, good point. Probably the pitch doesn't look very good in Kyiv at the moment.
No. Obviously they've won 17 domestic titles, got a big fan base. That's probably a, That's a big one for us.
I think any away match in Europe is always going to be tough. But yeah, yeah. I agree. That's a difficult one. But okay, yeah, okay, doable.
So that one's on the 2nd of October. So that's kind of...
that's the first one.
That's the first one.
Okay.
The one that we know that Adam Wharton's going to miss and potentially Saar, which is annoying. And then, of course, we go on 23rd of October. We've got AEK Larnaca. And for those of you who've been on holiday to Cyprus, you'll know that Larnaca is in Cyprus.
That's a lovely little trip that is for the fans.
Absolutely. Obviously they qualify for Europa, but they've ended up being in the Conference League because they've had a bit of a nightmare.
So is that away as well?
That's at home.
Oh, boring.
I know. So there's no holiday for the Palace fans.
Okay. I was getting excited for you lot then.
So that is our first home one on a Thursday night on the 23rd of October. We then got AZ Alkmaar.
AZ Alkmaar, okay.
Yeah. Obviously the Dutch side.
Yes.
So that's in November, early November. And then we've got Strasbourg, French club, obviously, Ligue 1. And interestingly, Neil, Liam Rossini.
Yes. I know a lot about Strasbourg.
Okay.
Because of Liam Rossini, yeah.
So, there you go.
So anyone doesn't know, I'm sure you probably the Brighton side do, but yeah, Liam Rossini used to be at Brighton as a player, and he also managed our underage teams as well. I think he was at Hull City's first official job as a manager.
And Reading as well.
Reading, good point, yeah, good shout. But now he's Strasbourg manager. So where is that? Is that home or away?
That's away, 27th of November.
That, I think, is probably... That will probably be your toughest job, I think. I mean, Strasbourg are part of Bluco, so they're part of the Chelsea multi-club ownership, which would be fun for you guys, I'm sure.
I mean, they finished seventh in Ligue 1, so...
They did, but they also, if you see the end of their season, when they got themselves firing, they had a fantastic run. They've signed really sensibly, because obviously they've got a lot of backing to sign some really good players. I would say they may be... I expect them to be in the semi-finals, put it that way, in this cop competition.
Yeah.
And I expect them to be one of your toughest games. But yeah, away as well. That'd be interesting. I think that's they play some really good football as well. They're good to watch.
Looking forward to that one. And obviously into December now, we've got Shelbourne away, obviously the reigning Irish champions.
That's a nice little trip as well.
Well, it's a little bit of one of them, isn't it, really, where you're in Europe, but you're actually heading to Ireland. It's probably not quite what the fans, no offence to Ireland, of course, probably not quite what the fans were hoping for. But they qualify for the Champions League and then got knocked down after the Conference League playoffs. The last one, if I do pronounce this correctly, I have done my homework on this, and I believe it is actually pronounced Cups.
Oh, yes. Scandinavian. I can't remember where they're from.
Finland.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So they won the title last season, along with the domestic cup as well, to make it a double. They've made it into the league phase of a UEFA competition for the first time this year.
Wow. Okay.
And it'll also be the first time they meet an English club. So there you go.
Oh, is it?
They are our opposition. But obviously, as I said to you, our first one, Dynamo Kiev, which I think is a great starter for us in Europe as well. So really looking forward to all that. Thursday nights under the lights.
That's going to be very exciting for you guys. And I think if you look, we can do something a little bit more in detail, I think, when you actually get to October and the games start. But I think I was looking the other day at all of the teams that are in the Conference League and sort of, you know, how much of a favourite are Crystal Palace. And I think you always look to sort of see where what team made it from maybe Spain or Italy or Germany. Those are the ones that probably are going to have the biggest chance to upset Crystal Palace and stop the favourites from winning it. And I think when you look at that, you've got Fiorentina from Italy. You have Mainz, interestingly, from Germany, who you already played beginning of pre-season. And you've got Rayo Vallecano as well from Spain, who I don't think are a very good side. And the Spanish ones are the ones that I would have always expected to be the strong ones in this league. Looking at that already, I think you're clearly the favourites to win this. So it's up to you guys not to muck it up.
I don't agree with that.
I didn't think you would.
No, I don't agree with that narrative at all. It's our first time ever in Europe. How can we be the favourites to win a competition?
Because you've got the best players, mate. The biggest budget.
Again, not in terms of what we've spent. I think the majority of them teams would have spent more than minus 16 million.
I don't think any of those clubs could win the FA Cup.
I
don't think any of those clubs could finish 12th in the Premier League.
I get it. I think a lot of the people that are saying this are underestimating the squad depth and the fact that
The schedule, I think, is going to potentially be incredibly difficult for us. I want us to win it. Yeah. I want us to win it, but already we've already got two of our first team out injured after the last run of games. So let's see how we get on.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, well, thank you for that. That's actually really informative.
It's a pleasure, Neil.
I appreciate
that. I'm here to inform.
Can't wait to see it. Honestly, I'll be watching paint dry. So the other draws that happened this week were the League Cup draw.
And now Palace are in this one this time
round. Now you're interested, aren't you?
Yeah, we're in this one now.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So
who have you got?
Albion get to face a great draw for us, I think. So we got Barnsley. It's away, which is slightly annoying, but so they're top of League Two. They're actually in good form. They've won.
They've fallen from grace of Barnsley.
They have a little bit, yeah. Mm. If you remember, at one point they were actually in the Premier League for one season. So they're fourth in League Two currently. As I say, they're in pretty good form, so it won't be easy, but I think it's a better side of the draw to be in than obviously having the European Champions League teams and all that come back in this draw. So I'm looking forward to that. So this draw, the way the fixtures have worked out, because the teams that are in Europe are back in now, they have to do the League Cup games on two midweek sessions rather than one. So actually we are in the sort of the second bit, which is the 23rd of September is our game away. So it's another few weeks away yet. Palace, you guys got... Oh, yes.
Well, it's a bit of a weird one, really. I mean, what are the chances of us drawing Millwall again?
That's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
So weird. So you got Millwall. Home or away? I can't remember.
It's at home. Yeah. And it's the week after next.
So you got the first bit. Okay,
tickets went on sale Wednesday this week, I think.
Right.
I think it's a good draw for us. Mm. We know what to do. And I think Mateta's putting his body armour on as we speak. let's see what happens. But I think that's a good draw for us and every chance of getting through if we've got enough of our squad.
Yeah, I agree. I think for both teams, you should be favourites to go through. So we'll find out Palace's one quite quickly. As you say, it's the week before Brighton's. So hopefully a good cup run would be nice for Brighton. It'd be nice for us to get a few extra games as we're not in Europe this season.
Well, look, let's be honest. The cup runs are the easiest way to get into Europe.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Premier League then restarts after the international break. Palace. Oh,
we've got Sunderland.
You've got the new boys, Sunderland.
Yeah, bearing in mind you were saying about how we had one of the most difficult starts one of the most difficult starts to the Premier League. We've come out of that with 5 points, which I think is a very good show.
No, it is. It is, I agree.
So now's the time to muck it up, isn't it? Let's be honest. Yeah, I think, look, wins at Brentford and West Ham for Sunderland, and I think they only loss was Burnley, ridiculously. Mm. So they've got off to a good start. I'm not saying we fear them, but I don't think this is your normal season of, player of a promoted team, 3 points in the bag. Yeah. I don't think we're there these days. As I said earlier, Palace are only one of three teams that are still unbeaten this season. I know it's very early to say stupid stuff like that, but that's a ridiculous stat in itself. Three teams that haven't lost a game, and we've only played, three games? Ridiculous. Anyway, last time we met Sunderland, 2017, February, we lost 4-0.
Blimey.
Yeah, so let's hope we've improved since then. As I said to you, Sarr is injured, out for about 3 to 4 weeks. Walton's injured, 3 to 4 weeks. There was also, by the way, something online that terrified the hell out of me, which said something about Jeremy potentially being injured, Jeremy Pino. So I'm hoping that
would be awkward. Blimey.
Well, it wasn't a particularly trusted source, but then why would that even be out there? but anyway, let's see. But I think it's time for some of our new boys to get a start. And I'm saying, let's keep this one going. 2-0 Palace. If we win that, we're up in the top. We're in the top echelons.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, I think it's a good chance, isn't it?
Yeah, let's hope so. It's a nice home game as well. Only the second home game of the season for us. What about you? I was going to say you got a trip down to the seaside, but you already are the seaside, aren't you? You're going along the coast.
We're going along. We're having a little drive along to Bournemouth. It's a strange one, this, because we've got a really good record against Bournemouth.
Okay.
Which surprises me, because every time I watch the game against Bournemouth, I always feel like we're going to lose. No, because Bournemouth play really well. They play really good football. And I think Bournemouth have been unlucky against Albion, actually. The last game at home against Bournemouth. There was nothing in it. I mean, we were lucky to win that game.
They haven't had a good window, though, have they? They've made a lot of money.
Yet they're still, you know, they're still doing well on the pitch. And I think that's the thing. They've got 6 points in their first three games. So, yes, they lost Liverpool opening game, but they've won both their next two games. So, look, last five games against Bournemouth, our record is fantastic. So we've won four of the last five, which I'm surprised the hell out of me, as I said. So hopefully we'll just nullify ourselves between us and we'll probably get a draw. But I don't know, because at the moment, we, Brighton, are just so unpredictable.
I was going to say, I find it very hard to say what you're going to do on a daily basis.
I just don't know which team are going to turn up. I don't know how many changes he's going to make. I don't know who ends up being injured. I don't know when the next time is we might actually see three games in a row where we've got the same team. If we can do that, when we might actually then be able to start working out whether this Brighton team is any good. At the moment, jury's out. I haven't got a clue. So I'm looking forward to the game. It's always a good game to watch. It's always exciting, but it's on the Saturday, 3 o'clock. So obviously there's no TV to watch it. So none of us can officially watch it in any way, and none of us would ever recommend doing any other way to watch the game on a 3 o'clock Saturday, obviously. But if you do manage to see the game, it should be a good watch.
Do you know what I got out of that, Neil?
Go on.
Brighton expert, Seagull Eagle podcast. Neil quote, I haven't got a clue.
I haven't got a clue. Honestly, don't know which team will turn up. Let's wait and
you're absolutely right on that one. I've struggled to find a result on that one. I would go either 1-1 or Bournemouth get you, because they're at home and they've had a good start, 2-1. But I don't think there's going to be much in it, mate. And I'm not just going Brighton are going to lose because I'm a Palace fan. I think it could go either way, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Bournemouth do get the better of you on that one.
Well, as you've given me your opinion, let me give your my opinion on the Palace-Sunderland. I think that Palace will come out winners on that one. I do. I think they should, and I think they will. But I also see Sunderland scoring. So I reckon I reckon it'll be a high scorer. I reckon it'll be 3-2.
You reckon we're going to concede two goals?
Yeah,
bear in mind we haven't.
I know.
We haven't really.
I know. I think Mark Gahey will be a bit distracted about all the stuff that's happened. He'll be very disappointed.
Here he goes again.
Speaking of which, actually, we should mention, you'll probably realise we haven't talked about transfers in this podcast.
Yeah.
We're going to do a podcast special where we talk just purely about the transfer window. We're just recording it, but we thought otherwise this podcast now, with this episode, would be like 5 hours long. So we'd prefer to just keep it, talk about the football. But the next podcast will be out in a couple of days, straight after this one, and it's just a special on its own.
Transfer special.
There you go, that job. So stay tuned. If you've listened to this one, thank you very much. And we will do a podcast special next time.
And that's us done for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you very much for listening.
Make sure to follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops.
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, X, and whichever social media site you use. Just search Seagull Eagle to get the conversation started.
Drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com too.
And we'll see you next time. Until then,